Hello, everybody. Welcome to Spooktown.
Greetings.
I'm Megan.
I'm Caitlin.
And we're sisters.
We are indeed.
Surprise! So today, we're going to be indulging in the Menendez murders.
Indulging?
Indulging. It's a good case. I mean, not for the victims.
It's like fine wine of murder.
Yes, exactly. It's the Bordeaux of murder cases.
We're going to start this podcast out with a bang, literally. Several.
Several maybe bangs. Maybe 11. Several shotgun bangs. Anyway, just a hint. But yeah, this case is full of twists and turns and surprises. So get ready, guys.
Feel like being creeped out?
You've come Welcome. To the right place.
Welcome.
So, as Caitlin knows, I've had quite the stressful day so far. I had some run-ins with the law and almost went to jail, but it's fine. I didn't. All is well. So, we thought we'd calm down with some, you know, murder.
You know, yesterday was a full moon and,
That's why.
That's why.
Yeah. Weird shit happened.
You're not a bad driver, it's just the moon.
I'm such a bad driver.
You should see her car.
Oh, no.
Or maybe you shouldn't.
Oh, it's...
It depends on whether or not you want to cry.
It's a pretty sight. But, okay, we will get into the Menendez murders. So, the Menendez murders occurred on August 20th of 1989 in Beverly Hills, California. The Menendez brothers, Eric and Lyle, were 18 and 21 at the time of the murders. So, Eric was 18 and Lyle was 21. Their parents were Jose Menendez and Mary Menendez. And Mary went often by Kitty. Jose, their father, was in the movie business, specifically as an entertainment executive. Now, he was a man who highly concerned himself with prestige and his reputation. He was all about that life.
That image.
Yeah, he definitely cared about his image, for sure.
Usually those people are really loving.
Oh, yeah. Great parents. Mm-hmm. We'll get to that. So, Eric, at the time, lived with his parents in California, while Lyle attended Princeton on the East Coast. Little smart nugget over there. Lyle frequently visited Eric in California and came down to Eric's high school graduation in 1989, where the events sort of start to unroll. So, just some more background. Both brothers did have burglary records. Wow. Burglary.
Oh, they did.
Burglary. Oh. That word is so hard to
burglary.
Say. Burglary. Yeah, they did.
They didn't, you know, it's a common cliche of the rich people always stealing.
Yeah, they were well off, so... I don't know. Supposedly, Jose, when he heard about this, he was only concerned and mad that they got caught doing it and not that they were actually stealing, which, you know, that's some good parenting, wouldn't you
Morals.
Agree?
Morals.
Yeah. In high school, Eric had written a screenplay with a friend about a teenager who killed his parents.
Oh, wait, who did Lyle?
Eric.
Oh.
Isn't that some creepy foreshadowing? Spoiler alert, he kills his parents. Yeah.
That's just kind of, I don't know. Unsettling to kill, like, the people who brought you into this world.
Was he fantasizing? Probably.
Wonder why he didn't like his parents.
Gee. We'll get to that. So, while Lyle was still in town, Eric pulled him aside to talk to him about something. And Eric told Lyle that their father had been sexually abusing him since he was 6. And since he's now 21, that's a total of 15 years.
That's 15 years too long.
Yeah, exactly. That's 16 years too long. Don't even think about it.
Oh, dear God.
That's your father.
I will never understand that.
It gets worse. Just wait. So, on top of this, Eric also reports physical abuse from their mother, which, you know, your dad's, like, sexually abusing you. Your mom's hitting you. At least he has his brother, right?
I don't understand how you can do anything in the world at all if that's happening to you.
Oh, like how he functions?
Like, I would just curl up in a ball and die. Well, I might see some... behaviors.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there might be some psyche issues in the future. We'll find out. So, Eric, when he told Lyle, this was 5 days before the murders on August 15th. So, this is when it all kind of began. It
happened fast.
It did. So, initially, Lyle's response to this information was less than reputable, I would say. Initially, he became really upset with Eric. And classic victim blaming was saying, you know, how could he let this happen? Did he enjoy it? Like, why didn't he tell anyone about it or stop it himself?
Like, it's hard to believe that your dad would do something like that.
Yeah, but, like, why would you...
and why did he only abuse Eric and not Lyle?
I don't know. I'm not Jose. Mm. I don't live in that mess. I live in another mess, but not that mess. Not that kind of mess.
There's no really reasoning with why you abuse children.
So. No, but I mean, Lyle's response was like a dickhead move, though.
Yeah. But you want to believe your parents are good people.
So can't relate.
The first stage of grief is denial, so.
I mean, okay. Well, then, after they kind of sorted that out, Lyle then asked him if he had told anyone else or if anyone else knew. And Eric said, no, no one else knew. But Lyle said, no, I think Mom knows. Which is kind of creepy foreshadowing, which we'll touch on more later.
Wait, so how does, if Lyle didn't know Eric was being abused, how did he know that their mom knew?
I don't know, maybe after Eric said it, something clicked and he was like, some weird behaviors started to make sense.
Yeah.
So by the end of their conversation, Lyle had told Eric, you know, not to worry and that he would make sure that none of this would ever happen again. This kind of made Eric nervous because he knew that Lyle was going to confront their father, who, you know, as a good guy he was known for his temper and abuse pattern. And Eric was afraid that the whole mess was going to explode. And, I mean, it kind of makes sense. Like, he was silent for 15 years, right? And he's just kind of used to that.
Yeah.
Poor guy. Apparently, when Eric was 13, he wrote a letter to his 10-year-old cousin, Andy Cano, confiding in him about his father's molestation.
Okay. When so there's a record of this.
There's a record of this. In Eric's letter, he talked about, I'm going to put this in quotes, genital massages.
Oh my god.
That his father would give to him.
Oh god, that's sick.
And he was asking Andy, like, if this was normal for fathers to do.
Wait, how old was he at this time?
13. So, in the letter, Eric told Andy that he wanted them to stop and that they were beginning to hurt. And Eric claims that the abuse began as early as 6.
That's your parents, they're gods to you when you're kids.
I mean, yeah, you grow up with that.
That's, like, his normal, and that's so horrible.
Yeah. It's gotta mess with your psyche at some point. So Eric was a recent high school graduate, and he was planning to attend UCLA. He was talking to his dad, and he found out that despite having a dorm, because all freshmen had to live in dorms at that school, his father was gonna make him stay home several nights a week.
Wonder why.
Yeah, so we'll insert a clip of his reaction to that.
I was in the den with Dad, and he was going over my college work. He was explaining to me that I would be living at home several nights a week. That even though I had a dorm, all the freshmen had to live in a dorm, but really I'd be living at home. I kept asking him, what do you mean? I thought I would be gone. I had this sinking pain. Sadness. It was like in that moment, all of the dreams that I had pinned everything on about escaping home, they just got crushed inside of me.
Escape, I have freedom. You know, upon hearing the news, he immediately knew, like, this was never gonna end, and that unless he did something about it.
So he's been backed into a corner almost at this point.
Yeah. After talking to his dad and hearing that he wouldn't really be, like, away at college, Eric tried to run away and began panicking. But his mom came into his room, you know, saw that he was packing to leave. She started ripping his clothes, like, straight out of his bag and was like, you're not going anywhere.
He's 18.
He's 18,
right?
Yes. So he can, but, you know, she was freaking out and she went to go get Jose, which is not ever a good thing. Jose hears that Eric is trying to leave, and he flips out. So he busts into Eric's room, and he threw him up against a wall, pressed his arm, like, against his neck.
What the fuck?
Like, on the wall. And he says, do we have a problem? It's just fucking terrifying.
What are you, treating your child like a prisoner?
Yeah. And he continues to say, you better be here when I get back from my trip.
Oh my god. So sick.
Oh, it's like, it's creepy. Gives me weird vibes. So after this, Eric says he felt defeated, dead inside, and that he even considered suicide, which I don't blame him. A couple days later, Lyle confronts their father about the abuse. This encounter occurred on August 17th. So this was 3 days before. Lyle basically told him that the abuse was going to stop and that Jose was never to touch Eric again. Lyle told him that, you know, he was a sick person for what he had done. But Jose's response was, you know, stay out of it. Don't throw your life away over this.
What do you mean, throw your life away?
Doesn't that sound like a threat?
I hate it when, like, a parent will say, oh, it's none of your business. That's my sibling. It's, and if anyone's business, it's my business.
Yeah, exactly. In this case,
she's my family.
Brother Trump's a father. But, I mean, don't throw your life away over this. That sounds like a threat. Like,
what are you going to do?
If you don't leave it alone, like, I'll do something to you? Like, I don't know. Well, then Jose goes up to Eric's room. He starts screaming, cursing, you know, doing his whole Jose thing, banging on Eric's door for him to come out. So at this point, Jose knows that his secret is out. After all the banging, Eric finally surrenders, lets his dad in his room.
He let him in.
Yeah, that was a big no-no.
I would have run out the window.
I mean, that would have been better than letting him in. Eric finally lets Jose in his room, and Jose starts yelling at Eric, you know, I warned you never to tell anyone. What have you done?
I mean, you could have just not abused me, but...
Yeah, for 15 years, it's fine. I mean, not even once.
I get it.
It's okay, you know? But 15 years.
Oh, God.
So, at this point, Jose is clearly afraid that Eric and Lyle are going to expose him to the world, and that his, you know, treasured career in life would be over. Because remember, he's a man of reputation, and so this would kill him. Eric, at this point, then runs down to his mom, probably in search of some resemblance of comfort in all the midst of this chaos. And when Eric finds his mom in the den... Okay, what is a den? That word comes up so many times in this case. I have no idea what a den is.
I believe a den is kind of like a living room.
Like the study. Sounds like a secret cave.
That's what a room rich people have in their houses.
No wonder I don't know what it is.
For people who are better than us.
Right? Yeah, okay.
That's why you don't know.
Well, he finds his mom in this... quote-unquote den, and she asks him what's wrong, and he replies, oh, nothing, you wouldn't understand. To which Kitty replies, oh, I understand. I understand a lot more than you think. I know. I've always known. Do you think I'm stupid?
What the fuck?
So, Jesus. That was what we were hinting to earlier.
I don't know what's worse, the dad abusing him, the mom enabling it. Not doing anything.
Yeah. So, yeah, when Lyle said earlier he thinks his mom knows, I mean, clearly she does, and she's known probably this whole time. But yeah, this clearly confirms that she's known about the abuse all these years, and she's just simply been idle and enabled all this fuckery. I don't know how you do that. Like, what's,
how do you live with
what's
yourself?
Worse at that point, Jose or his mom?
I don't know.
They're both
villains.
How
do you sleep at night?
Who knows? Maybe she doesn't. This news that his mom, you know, was enabling... The abuse all these years obviously shattered his psyche even further. He feared that the abuse would never stop, and his mom was just a complacent bystander with no intention of supporting him. He claims that this was the moment where he knew his parents were going to kill him. I mean, there were a couple threats, and I don't know the vibes going on, but that's kind of a bold claim that you think your parents are
going to
kill you.
I mean, I can understand if you think your parents are going to kill you, why you would try to kill them. I can see where he's coming from.
I mean, there's so many other things to, like, you don't have to stoop to murder.
Right, but...
You know, the cops, hello. He's 18, like...
That's true.
But, I mean...
It's a crime of passion.
Crime of passion. So the next day, Jose and Kitty had arranged a trip on a boat with the brothers, which they clearly thought was weird, considering the events of everything that happened. Like, everyone knows what Jose's done.
Oh, sexual abuse has come out. Family vacation time.
Yeah, it's so weird.
Bonding.
Hey, their family's so fucked up. Maybe that is their fucking bonding. I don't know. Well, when they got on the boat, Eric remembers Kitty being extremely angry that there were so many crew members on the boat. Like, she thought it was just going to be the driver, sailor.
What boat. Is this?
This was, like, 2 days before the murders.
Okay.
So, she was angry that there were a bunch of people on the boat, but why would she care?
Were they planning to, like,
off
do
them
to their children?
I don't know. Seems fishy. So, Eric thinks that. He thinks that they planned to kill him that day on the boat, but were unable to due to all the potential witnesses, you know, floating around. And especially, what's more weird about this, the rest of the trip, Kitty and Jose spent their entire time separate from the boys inside the boat while Eric and Lyle talked outside on the deck the whole time. So, like, why go on a trip when That's you're weird. Just going to ignore your...
None of this makes sense.
No, it doesn't. But, I mean, that adds to their theory that their parents were going to kill them, and that's, like, what they thought. So, yeah, I don't know if there's substance to that, but it is suspicious.
So, the threats that the parents, the hints they're giving their kids about how they're going to kill them, plus the incident on the boat, is adding fuel to Eric and Lyle's fire of
we need they to feel kill
our
cornered. Parents.
That's our only option.
Yeah. The very next day, Eric and Lyle went to buy shotguns in San Diego.
Like you do.
Like you do.
Boats and guns.
Boats and guns. Hey, band name. Call it. So we're here. We are at August 20th, the day of the murders.
Day of the deed.
The day of the deed. The morning of, Eric decided to take a trip to Santa Monica to be away from the house because Lyle was planning to stay home and talk to his parents more about the whole situation. I guess that whole, like, big brother, like, I'm gonna protect you mode. Does that ever happen to you? No?
Nah.
Oh, okay. Thanks, sis. So, when Eric returned to the house later that night, Lyle was waiting there for him, and he seemed really upset with him that he had come back so late from the trip. Lyle said that they needed to leave immediately, and that everything had gone terribly wrong.
How can he get more wrong?
We'll see. So, Jose had said that he wanted them both home that night, and he was being very strict. He didn't want them to go anywhere. And, of course, Eric and Lyle, they think they're going to use this opportunity to kill them.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, like, why else would they demand that they stay home and they're freaking That's out that terrifying. They're going to leave? Yeah, thinking they wanted them both home.
Your own parents are going
to
kill you.
Yeah. Lyle kept telling Eric, you know, we have to leave. He was very persistent about that. However, Kitty just kept saying, no, you're not going anywhere and that everyone is staying right here. And when they asked her why they have to stay, she just pulled that whole mom thing and was like, because I said so. Like, I fucking hate that.
Moms are God, apparently.
Ugh, fuck. Then Jose comes out of the den, starts freaking out, you know, doing his Jose thing, telling Kitty to shut up, yelling at Lyle and Eric that they're not going out and that nobody is going anywhere. So I'm going to insert a little clip from Eric and Lyle's perspective on what was going on right here.
It sounds very chaotic.
Yeah. Can you imagine? Everyone's just fucking yelling at each other, screaming, you think you're going to die?
Oh, God.
Ooh. Yes.
We had made a big mistake asking to go out.
I realized that they had been waiting forever to get home, like I had been. And I just freaked out. Thought they were going ahead with their plan to kill us.
Okay, so after his screaming, Jose told Eric to go to his room and said that he'd be there in a minute. Now, this seemed to trigger everyone.
That was terrifying.
Because this seemed to be his M.O.
I'll be in your bedroom in 1 second, hon. Give me one minute.
This seemed to be his M.O. with Eric, like, when he would abuse him. Like, just wait in your room for me. It's disgusting. But Lyle then stepped out in front of Jose and said, no, you're not going to touch my brother. And Jose didn't take this very well, and things quickly escalated. He started screaming, I do what I want with my family. He's not your little brother. He's my son. Which is disgusting.
He actually is your little brother.
But, like, he's basically saying, like, I get to do whatever I want to him, and then it's none of Lyle's business.
Your child is not your property or your object. It's a person.
It's also not your sex toy. Can we just say that? Just oh, my that God. You know, like, Jose, there are sex dolls. Like, can you leave your son alone, please?
That's so sick.
You might be alive today if you did. Just saying. So, Kitty then told Lyle that he'd ruined the family, and she went to join Jose in the den. But honestly, fuck Kitty. I am so fucking sick of Kitty. I think she's almost worse than Jose.
Yeah. Like, she's their mom.
Like, she has the audacity to get mad at Lyle for doing what she should have done, which is stand up for her fucking son.
Like, you gave birth to this human and you let the worst possible thing happen to them.
On purpose. Also, how are you married to someone that you know sexually abuses your son? And
this lady's all kinds of fucked up.
Yeah. Like, what is wrong? Oh my God, this family. On to the murder. It was at this point that Lyle and Eric went upstairs and grabbed their shotguns. So after getting
ready,
they're getting geared up.
Let's go.
So they ran downstairs and they busted into the den where Kitty and Jose were watching a movie and started firing. And apparently they first shot Jose in the back of the head. Next they went after Kitty.
So they took out Jose first.
They took out Jose first.
No, I'm kind of surprised they killed Kitty and Jose.
Well, I want to fucking kill her,
I
too.
Know, but
she lets this shit happen, and it's just like, ooh, let's go on a little boat vacation.
And she'd be a witness, I guess.
Yeah. So, initially, Kitty was actually sleeping on the couch, and she was woken up, you know, by murder.
Yeah.
And, obviously, she saw what her sons had done to Jose, and she started to run out of the den away from them. She never made it, because she was shot in the leg first, just to prevent her from running. That kind of sends a message. Yeah. I mean, hey, they flipped it on her. She said, you're not going anywhere. No, but who's not going anywhere?
How when did they get these shotguns?
They got them a couple days before the murders.
They bought them?
Yeah, they bought them in San Diego. Huh. After shooting Kitty in the leg, the Menendez brothers proceeded to shoot her several more times in the arm, head, and neck.
So they shot Jose once and her four times?
Oh, no, no, no. They shot Jose 5 times. Okay. And Kitty 9 times.
9?
Yes.
Huh. I would have thought they have more anger for Jose.
I know, right? But I think it's because they killed him first, gotcha. And he was already dead. And the rest of the 4 shots were just anger shots, because he was already dead.
You bastard.
Yeah, so they shot both Kitty and Jose in the kneecaps after they were already dead. Just as, like, a fuck you final shot. Fuck you. Final fuck you. The last hurrah.
Your skeleton shall not have functioning kneecaps.
Exactly. But actually, something else to note, during the attack, they actually ran out of bullets, and they had to go to their car to get more.
Ooh.
Which, that specific detail gets to me, and I don't know why. Ugh. Like, it's really just, like, morbid. It's like
driving
and
your murderiness outside in the public.
Like, it's emotionally air. Fueled, right? Like, they thought they were gonna get killed, whatever, I get that. But then they have the time to, like, go reload while Kitty's, like, I don't know if they're dead at this point, if Kitty's half dead. So, like I said, they were shot a total of almost 15 times, and Kitty was said to be completely unrecognizable. Like,
ew.
They blasted her face off.
Oh, God.
You know the show Face Off? But, like, ew. Very different. Very different.
See, this is a rage-fueled action.
Yeah, you don't do that to someone who is just like, oh, God.
But they didn't do that to Jose.
No, Jose was recognizable.
Hmm.
I guess...
I don't know if Kitty had more to do with this than...
Well, I think... I mean, this is just conjecture, but... They had... Eric, especially... Like, Lyle just knew about this 5 days before.
Right.
But Eric had known about Jose doing this his whole life, obviously. But he just found out that his mom knew. And that probably made him so mad.
Because that was sudden.
Yeah.
He's...
And she's the reason it kept going on. Well, in his mind.
So, like, the one person he thought loved him and had his back...
Was against him.
Portrayed him in the ultimate way you can.
Yeah. That's a form of abuse. If not, it should be.
That makes more sense then.
Yeah. So after the murders, the brothers just sat and waited for the police to arrive. After about 10 minutes of waiting, they realized that no one had called the police.
How do you not hear gunshots?
Dude, I don't fucking know. Like, not one neighbor. Well, okay.
There's no such thing as gunshot ASMR.
It's not that they didn't hear it. Like, unless no one was home, which is rare. Especially in, like, a suburban-y neighborhood like theirs. They were in freaking Beverly Hills.
Very strange.
So, either that or, like, everyone heard it and just ignored it. And what's that thing called? The bystander effect.
Oh, yeah.
Where no one does anything.
True.
Because they think someone else is going to call.
Or maybe you hear it and you're like, that can't be a gunshot.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, today, when a car hit me, I was just like, oh, my car just stalled. No. There's a car in my back.
You try to find any other explanation.
Yeah. When they realized that nobody had called the cops, they thought that they might actually get away with this. So, with that in mind, they started to clean up a little bit of the crime scene. Not, like, the blood and stuff, but just, like, eliminating their traces. So, they picked up their shotgun shells and, like, anything that could tie them to the scene.
I feel like this is a bit of an afterthought.
Yeah, this wasn't planned. Well, I mean, they kind of thought that... That's kind of an issue. Like... Later, it's like, was it premeditated? Was it emotionally fueled? No one really knows for sure.
Right, but if you're waiting for the cops and you're like, oh wait, maybe we should clean up our bullets.
That yeah, because, I mean, initially fashion. They were just ready to go to jail, but then they're like, wait a minute.
Okay.
We're safe. So after cleaning up their shotgun shells, changing clothes, because, you know, blood's not in. Bloody clothes are not in right now. They had to change their clothes.
It's a little bit suspicious.
Yeah. And it wasn't Halloween, so they can't get away with it. You know that scene in The Office where it's Halloween and Creed comes in with, like, a bloody shirt?
Oh, no.
And, like, oh, the cops come for some stupid thing, and he's like, thank God it's Halloween.
Oh, my God.
Creed is just a mess. But, yeah, so they changed their clothes and eliminated any evidence that they were the killers. They tried to frame this as a break-in. They gathered up their shotguns, they got in the car, and they headed to the movies to buy tickets for their alibi.
Oh.
Like, to buy, like, maybe, like, a ticket that was...
During that time.
During that time. Even if the movie had already
started.
What'd
they do with the shotguns? Leave them in their car?
No, so they ditched the shotguns. Then they drove all the way to Mulholland to get rid of the guns. But they were kind of lazy about it. Like, they just kind of pushed them under a bush off the side of the road and covered them with a little dirt. Just
amateurs.
Amateurs. After covering their tracks, they returned home and proceeded to call the cops. And we're going to play the 911 call for you here, which is... Well, we've heard it, and it's really chilling. Because it's... Well,
prepare
you'll see.
Prepare yourself.
Yes.
Goosebump Central.
Lyle called the police. He was crying.
Yes, police. What's the problem? What's the problem? What's the problem?
Someone killed my dad.
Pardon me? Were they shot?
Yes.
They were shot?
Yes. Who was the person that was shot?
My mom and my dad.
As you can clearly hear, Lyle sounds very emotional on the call. If you listen closely, you can also hear Eric screaming in the background.
Sounds like my job, just screaming in the background at all times.
Caitlin used to work at a adolescent psych ward?
Yes.
A little bit like Outlast, you know? So, you're used to this shit.
You go home crying.
It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
Peaceful day at work.
Bruises, you know.
Oh my god.
Teeth marks. Claw marks.
Has someone ever punched you in the face?
Yes, I got punched in the nose.
God.
I heard for 3 months.
All for the kiddos. Who's to know if this emotion in the phone call was sincere or not? It could have all just been an act to make themselves appear innocent on the phone call. Or maybe they were really distraught and felt like they had no other way out of their situation. Stupid, but plausible. The police arrived within minutes after the call. And upon seeing the crime scene and how gruesome it was... They assumed there was mafia involvement.
They assumed mafia involvement?
That's how gruesome it was.
Holy shit.
And plus, like, Jose being in the, like, movie business, there were some, like, weird connections.
Oh, right.
But no one had suspected the brothers at this time.
Wow.
They were, like, getting away scot-free.
That's crazy.
They fuck it up later, though. So, the police first began to become suspicious of the Menendez brothers due to uncovering their spending habits after the murders.
Wait, so if they weren't suspicious of them in the first place, why are they monitoring their bank accounts?
I mean, I think they just, like...
Precaution?
They don't have a person of interest, so they're, like, looking at everyone.
Right.
And it's just, like, I think it's standard to do, like, interview. They had interviews, but, yeah, for some reason their spending came up. And, boy, let me tell you, their spending was, oh my god.
It reflected great mourning.
They spent like $500,000.
Oh my.
Well, of their parents' money. Right. Each of them, Eric and Lyle, bought a new car, Rolex watches, vacations, and more. Like, in overview, they weren't acting or spending like two mourning or grieving brothers would be.
I mean, that's what I do when I'm sad, so.
I mean, retail therapy? Okay. I could see that.
It's a little extreme.
Extreme. But, like, vacations.
Bury those emotions under watches and cars.
There you go. Lyle spent almost a total of $315,000, and Eric spent $9,000. So Lyle was spending way more money than Eric. Eric probably just, like, he got a car, you know, like, got some money.
That's weird. But that's Lyle a huge discrepancy.
Lyle was like, I'm gonna buy every goddamn thing that I come across.
Lyle went off the walls.
Yeah.
Eric's relatively keeping it together.
Well, actually not, and we'll get to that. So, after a while, Eric began to severely struggle with his mental health.
You know, this poor kid.
Trying to cope with being a murderer is difficult, I imagine.
And being abused your whole life.
Yeah, and then he's probably struggling between, like, probably feels justice killing him, but then he probably regrets it because, you know, my dad, you know, there's some biological ties. Probably feels a little guilty.
He's conflicted.
He is. So, to help with his coping, he started to see a psychologist named Dr. Oziel about 2 months after the murders. Dr. Oziel is kind of famous in this case because he's a piece of shit scum.
Oh.
So, almost...
That's not where I was expecting you to go with
this. That's where I'm headed. So... Almost immediately, Eric disclosed to his therapist what he and Lyle had done to their parents. Hey, my name's Eric. What's your last name? I killed my parents.
Oh my god.
I assume that's how this interaction went. Like I said, the therapist is a piece of absolute shit scum. With, you know, patient-therapist confidentiality, there is a certain level of confidentiality. Do you know the exception?
If you if they have reason to believe that you're going to kill yourself or someone else.
Yes. But since the murders in the past, no one is being threatened.
Right.
So, like, you can tell your therapist you murdered a whole fucking family.
Right.
That's which the you law. Did. But they can't tell anyone because no one's in imminent danger. Like, the therapist was not allowed to disclose this information.
Can you imagine being the therapist? Like, fuck. Oh,
yeah.
I don't even want to...
But this scum nugget...
Do you have a counseling degree for this?
This scum nugget decides to use this information to blackmail Eric for money.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Dr. Oziel...
As a psychologist, the main thing you're supposed to do is do no harm.
And you're there to help people. Yeah, and build patient trust.
That's scary that someone who... You place so much trust in could turn the tables on you like that. Trust no one.
Dude, this guy has had no good authority figures in his life, ever. But, yes, so Dr. Oziel decides, you know, what am I going to do this Saturday? Oh, I'm going to extort the Menendez brothers in exchange for their silence.
I got brunch at 11 with Lisa, going out. What's the movie after?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, extortion.
The reason he was able to, like, go through with the blackmail, he recorded their sessions for proof if he ever had to turn it in, if, like, he didn't get a payment or something. Because he's a shit stain, oh, Caitlin. He also shared this information with his girlfriend at the time, the therapist.
What?
Not Eric. Her name was Judalon Smith.
Oh, Eric had a girlfriend.
No, the therapist.
Oh, okay.
Had a girlfriend. Her name was Judalon Smith, who just happened to be his patient as well.
Oh, no. Yep. Therapist-patient relationship, not a good
Is
thing.
Is that legal?
I don't think so. It's extraordinarily unethical, and you could lose your license for that.
We'll get to that. Yeah. Dr. Oziel, I can't say his name. Dr. Oziel, clearly a great guy. Awesome dude, you know.
Morals.
10 out of 10.
Again, with the morals.
There were some conflicting reports of whether his girlfriend... heard the recording that he played for her, or whether she was standing outside the door listening in. But either way, she was privileged to this information, and she knew everything. Eventually, Dr. Oziel broke up with Judalon, and now that she wasn't getting her cut of the money, she went to the police and turned in the Menendez brothers, which is how they finally got caught.
Oh, shit!
So if Eric had just kept his fucking mouth shut, they would have gotten away with it.
Or if this... psychologist, even if he did continue to blackmail them, if he hadn't have had a relationship
with
the patient. This would have never happened. This guy
exactly.
is a sleazebag. I'm imagining him with, like, squinty eyes, greasy black hair, and,
ew.
Like, rat tail mustache.
Oh,
that's the image I have in my head right now.
He's Rat Man.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just so you guys know, this teat-guzzling psychologist later lost his license.
Wait. Teat-guzzling?
Teat-guzzling. He was guzzling off the Menendez brothers' teats.
That's the first
Their
time I've
money
heard that.
Teats. He lost his license for breaking patient confidentiality and inappropriate sexual conduct.
Wait, you got in trouble for telling someone that your patient killed someone?
Surprisingly, yes.
You know, that's...
It is...
I mean, I get it, but it's weird.
It's like...
It's weird.
Fight between justice
yes.
and confidentiality. Obviously, the Menendez brothers were arrested on March 8th of 1990. So this was 7 months after the murders.
Wait, so like, even if the girlfriend of the psychologist told the police... All that is hearsay. Did they find evidence, or?
Well, yeah, when they hear that and they have no leads, they investigate it. They
okay.
got, you know, summons for, or warrants for his, like, office stuff.
No, I meant that Eric and Lyle. Hmm? Evidence that Eric and Lyle killed their parents.
His confession.
Okay.
To the therapist.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
This was recorded, right?
It was
okay,
recorded.
Gotcha.
And yeah. You know, once they knew that, they could... kind of put the pieces together,
right?
Find a hole in their quote-unquote alibi. Oh. The brothers were held in LA County Jail, sat to await their trial, for which they would be tried both separately. The cop who was taking Eric to jail actually warned him about LA County Jail and said that he was worried he wouldn't make it to his trial alive.
What?
Because that's how bad this fucking jail is.
What the heck?
It's not really pertinent to the case, but I thought it was interesting. Hmm. So Eric's experience in LA County was horrible. He said that it was packed and overcrowded with, like, some of the worst violent criminals. That the prison smelt of urine, and at night, like, rats would come out and bite you.
Ew.
Which is fucking disgusting.
Wait, I mean, but do they deserve the high life here?
I mean, no. But, like, it gets worse. Like, during the night, Eric would hear screams echoing through the hall of people being beaten, raped, tortured, and just, like, sobbing.
Okay, that's something from a horror movie.
Right? And the guy three cells down from Eric hung himself.
Oh, my God.
So, like, shit, that's your guess that's what you get for murdering your parents, but, like, that sucks. So, that was just a lovely environment in which they raided trial in. On to the trial. Both Lyle and Eric's trials resulted in mistrials due to deadlocked jurors.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So, like, six on six?
Both trials. So, both of their first trials, deadlocked. Both of their second trials, same thing. Wow. They had to have a third trial where they had a unanimous jury deem them guilty.
That's crazy. With the confession from Eric.
It took 7 years until they were finally deemed guilty by that third trial. You know,
can you imagine spending 7 years in jail not knowing if you get out? That's insane.
Yeah.
Not that they deserve anything better, but...
Yeah. So, the issue of the trial, like, why it was so hard for people to convict, it wasn't whether Eric and Lyle killed their parents. Like, we obviously knew that. It was whether or not it was, like, manslaughter or premeditated murder. The prosecution argued that the brothers killed their parents for hatred and greed. Like, they wanted their money. And that's why they killed them. But the defense argued that it was self-defense, you know?
Because they thought their parents were going to kill them.
They thought their parents were going to kill them. They gave the, like, you know, sexual abuse history.
There's a lot of evidence for that, I feel like.
On both sides, because they did buy the guns, like, 3 days before, right?
That's premeditated.
That is premeditated. Yeah. They had to go refill their bullets. That's, like, kind of weird.
But did they buy them for self-defense?
Who knows? But they did use them. It was basically an issue of premeditated murder or an emotionally fueled encounter.
I mean, which one's... Is one worse or better?
I fucking know. I mean, manslaughter out of self-defense. Premeditated murder, you're never getting out of jail.
True.
But in the end, they were sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of prisons to live out their life sentences. Which really sucks. They don't even get to see each other. However, 30 years later, when the brothers were 50 and 47 years old... They were reunited to live in the same prison. I don't think that's sweet?
I don't know if it says something about me that I'm kind of glad they were reunited.
I know, right?
Because, like, they went through hell.
They went through hell and they couldn't see each other for 30 years. You should see the, like, reunited pictures. They're both smiling, like, so much.
But at the same time, they're murderers.
Yeah, there is that fact. But it's
I'm conflicted about the results of this case. I feel bad for them, but also...
You know, do you think it was just their sentence?
I don't think there's... one correct answer to this.
Like, I mean, yeah, they killed their parents, but, like, when you think about it, they deserved it. And not that they shouldn't be punished, but, like, life without parole is kind of...
What they should have done is call the cops.
Oh, yeah. Then they might have gotten out of it, but, yeah. That was the case of the Menendez murders.
I mean, I thought our family was a little...
Oh, it is. A little messed up, but... I mean, no one got murdered. I mean...
Key to happiness is downward comparison.
There you go. That was the case. We hope you enjoyed it. Next time, Caitlin will be researching a case because I did all this research and let me tell you, it was a pain in the butt, but it was fun doing it. So.
Oh, yes.
Next time, it's your turn.
You get to hear my voice for the whole time. Love you guys.
We do. All right. See you guys next time.
You're awesome.